Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 14, Number 2. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was PSN, Number 23, The Human Cell. Of course, PSN is an acronym for Principles of Sports Nutrition. The cell is the basic unit of life, and the study of cells is called cell biology. The cell is a beautiful design of life. Cells are animated, and the stuff that keeps them alive is what holistic sports nutrition is all about. The cell is a highly organized unit that continuously engages in endless metabolic activities. Each cell contains our DNA, the blueprint and code of who and what we are. Our biological hardware is called our genotype, like the hardware in a computer. That we cannot change. But we can certainly change or modify how our genes express themselves. We have the power to turn them on and off. The development and maintenance of a living organism is facilitated by a vast network of chemical reactions that switch parts of the genome off and on at strategic times and locations. Epigenetics is the study of these reactions and the factors that influence them. And the good news of the day is that this new area of research, the science of epigenetics, is turning the world of fixed human behavior and determinism upside down. My topic for this edition of Clinical Review is PSN number 24, protein. Protein is numero uno, as in number one. The Greeks referred to it as proteos, meaning to come first. Protein should be the first thing we think of when it comes to eating. Say to yourself, where's the protein? It's what we need. It's essential. And here's why. We're principally made out of it, and we have to replace what we're made out of with what we're made out of. It's that simple. We're made of protein. We need to eat protein because we're losing protein, and we need more protein to make up for the protein loss. Straight up. Protein molecules consist of smaller amino acids, and specific amino acids, the ones we call essential, are critically important to the composition and function of body tissue, immune cells, neurotransmitters, enzymes, and hormones. Protein is like an anchor. It provides stability. Protein also has a high thermogenic effect. Consuming it elevates our metabolic rate greater than an equal amount of carbohydrates or fat. Protein helps stabilize the mind and clarifies the actual process of thinking. When it comes to the importance of protein compared to the other two macronutrients, protein definitely has an edge. Protein is king. Here's what Dr. Michael Colgan says about protein. Suck all the water out of a lean, athletic body, and what is left? Mostly protein. Over 50% of the dry weight of your body is protein. Even the hemoglobin that carries the oxygen in your blood is protein. The structure of your genes and your brain cells is totally protein. All bodily functions from the blink of an eye to the creation of new muscle are controlled by thousands of different enzymes, and all enzymes are proteins. So you'd better get your protein nutrition right if you have aspirations to become a champion, end quote. So protein is composed of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. You should know that. You should know the elemental structure of protein and be able to explain that to people. It's the carbon that makes it organic, but unlike fats and carbs, protein also contains nitrogen, which makes up about 16% of the molecule. So it's the big N, N for nitrogen, that separates protein from fats and carbs. Carbs and fats have no nitrogen, but they also are made up of carbon and hydrogen and oxygen, but their composition and structure is different. 78% of the Earth's atmosphere is nitrogen, but we can't just breathe it in and fix it inside of the body and generate new cells. It would be great if we could. It'd be awesome, but we can't. So we must obtain nitrogen from plant and animal sources in a prefixed state, so to speak. This is why when we think about getting our daily portion of essential amino acids in the form of high-quality protein, we've got to make sure that we don't ruin and damage the protein. Now, excess heat denatures protein, and denatured protein is not only useless, but it's also harmful to our cells, including our neurons. To denature means to make unnatural, to change, adulterate, or deviate from normal function and character. Cooking solidifies and hardens proteins. Think of an egg white on a pan, and you turn up the temperature, and you can see that the egg white that's soft and runny will start to harden. So cooking solidifies and hardens proteins through a process of cross-linking, in which undesirable chemical bonds interconnect with neighboring molecules to form rigid, unbreakable bonds. If the heat damage is extensive and prolonged, the cross-link attachments become irreversibly bound. Nothing inside of us can split them apart. They're bound for life. The result is a loss in flexibility and a change in the dimensional structure of the protein. Cross-linked proteins are hard and highly dysfunctional. They also lose all of their chemical messenger properties. And many of these properties relate to gene expression. Contrary to popular belief, the best way to consume protein is raw and undercooked, as opposed to overcooked and well done. Now, just for a moment, let's eliminate any risk regarding infection with parasites or bacteria. Let's say we've got access to an incredibly clean source of protein. Let's think of a raw piece of tuna and canned tuna. Let's keep that in mind. So neither one of them represents a risk of bacteria, so that's not why we're going to cook it. But let's think about digestion, absorption, and assimilation. Now, raw tissue protein is full of water, so it hydrates us. Bite into the raw tuna sashimi. You can sense the water in it. You can feel it. It hydrates you. Versus the canned tuna, there's no water in it. It's been cooked out. Cooking causes most of the water inside meat to come out. So when you eat dry flesh, it dehydrates your body. If you eat a can of dry tuna, you'll be dehydrated. If you eat the same amount of tuna at a Japanese restaurant and it's raw sashimi, you will not have this sensation or feeling. And the water inside the raw tuna will actually help you digest the actual protein that you're eating. Now, eating cooked dry flesh creates a much greater need for fluid intake. It's one of the reasons why so many humans are dehydrated, and then that increases their risk for disease pathology compared to eating the same piece of protein raw. At the same time, important enzymes are deactivated when you cook flesh, and many of the essential micronutrients naturally inherent in different plant and animal proteins are ruined. It's called heat labiability. Think of raw fish like tuna sashimi, undercooked red meat, and wild game. If you study indigenous patterns of cooking and eating and the survival strategies of different indigenous people, if you go out today to regions of the world that are basically uninhabited or barely inhabited, and you can still find, although it's rare, people that live off the land, you'll discover that these people and the people that came before us that lived off the land exclusively very seldom cooked or at least overcooked their primary sources of animal protein. They dried animal protein in the sun. They buried it in the dirt and even let it rot and ferment. Through trial and error and proven tradition, they discovered how to minimize damage and maximize the retention of the amino acids and the essential compounds. As a general guideline, the best way to cook protein is low temperature over a longer period of time. Put a chicken in the oven and cook it for 3 to 4 to 5 hours at a low temperature. That's by far better than, say, 35 minutes at high temperature. The worst way and the most common way today, because everyone's in a hurry, is high temp in a short period of time. You know, let's nuke the sucker and get it over with. Unfortunately, what you're consuming is nothing in value compared to what takes longer. You've got to approach food with a sense of patience, admiration, and you've got to see the connection between why you're consuming the food in the first place. It's not just about taste and pleasure. It's about nurturing the body and supplying the energy to the cells through breaking the bonds that are in the food, the plant or the animal, and creating ATP. So high temperature causes destruction of food and many of the micronutrients in that same food. Oxygen, heat, and light ultimately are enemies to whole natural food. In fact, they're enemies to us too, because that's what brings us down and everything else. You know, entropy, oxidation, radiation from the sun, gravity. These are forces that, we're faced with trying to understand and balance. Ultimately, they do win the battle. They do bring us down and crush us and dematerialize us and then waste us away to nothing. But in the meantime, before that happens at the end, in the central motion of our lives, we have to protect ourselves and food from these forces so that we can make the best of the situation. So the best way to eat anything, with obvious exception, is live and fresh. Remember that rules are made through the discovery of exceptions. Like this one, for example. It's the theory now proposed in evolutionary biology that explains how our human ancestors managed to get enough energy to grow their big brains. Brains that have three times as many neurons as those in other apes, including gorillas, chimps, and orangutans. The answer proposed is that our ancestors learned how to cook food, and specifically tissue protein, otherwise known as flesh. Remember, we come from a very definite hunting-gathering lineage. For most of our existence, farming was unknown. Human brains consume 20% of our body's energy when resting, compared with 9% in other primates. After adjusting for body mass, scientists have calculated how many hours per day it would take for various primates to eat enough calories of raw food to fuel their brains. They calculated it would take 8.8 hours for gorillas, 7.8 hours for orangutans, 7.3 hours for chimps, and 9.3 hours for our species, Homo sapiens. In the late 1990s, Harvard University primatologist Richard Wrangham proposed that the brain began to expand rapidly 1.6 million to 1.8 million years ago in our ancestor Homo erectus. Because this early human learned how to roast meat and tuberous root vegetables over a fire. The notion goes something like this. Cooking pre-digested our food, making it easier and more efficient for our guts to absorb calories more rapidly. To reinforce the idea, Wrangham and his colleagues proved in controlled lab conditions that rodents and pythons grow up bigger and faster when they eat cooked meat instead of raw meat, and that it takes less energy to digest cooked meat than raw meat. This theory attempts to explain why we have more neurons than any other animal on the planet, and we do. Cooking allowed this qualitative change, this biological step increase in brain size. By cooking, we manage to circumvent the limitation of how much we can eat in a day. And of course, concentrated flesh and tissue protein and meat will yield far more calories because of the fat and protein combined than a similar size resource or plant source. So, you know, the original hunters would carry pemmican, like the Plains American Indians, which was high in fat, like 85% fat. And you can motor for a long time on fat, kind of like the Inuit's high-fat diet. But fats that are coming from wild game, from natural sources that are not altered, modified, hydrogenated, and ruined because of the excess heat. And of course, pemmican is also bison meat. So high fat, which is not normal or what you would see in a bison on the plain. Even today, if you look at bisons, they're incredibly lean. So the Indians would intervene. They would take fat from the animal and mix it up much higher than what would normally be present with the protein. And then that's what they found to be very useful. And it was essentially a carb-free or very, very low-carb diet. You know, these people are living, they're very industrious, they're incredibly physically active, their labor-rich society demands a source of calorie-rich, concentrated food. So you can see how the concentrated cooked flesh is reduced in size and volume and therefore easy to carry around, and you could, you know, live on this while you were hunting other animals. Have you ever roasted a pig, a chicken, a rabbit, or goat over an open fire? Think to the original Conan the Barbarian starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's sitting there with Subutai, and they're chatting about life and whose god was superior to whose and how they defined their gods, and they're cooking an animal that they had caught over this open fire. And that is a paradigm of the origin of our own species. I mean, I've certainly done this, and it's one of my favorite ways to eat animal protein. Over an open fire outside, and theoretically, you've hunted the animal, you've expended energy, and now you're finding balance to the equation of energy expended and energy being consumed. Imagine out of necessity catching and killing something like a wild animal, little critter, then building a fire and eating it the same day. Maybe it's fish out of the sea and you're cooking it up right there on the beach. Maybe you've hunted something and you're on the step and you're eating it. Now, wouldn't you have a sense of genuine hunger? Wouldn't you be really hungry? And where's the refined processed food? There is none. So you satisfy your hunger with the protein, and it does truly satisfy your hunger, and it stays with you. It more or less sticks to your ribs. Plus, you have an appreciation because of everything that's gone in to catching the animal and stripping it down and degutting it and getting it ready to cook and then eating it. You have this connection to food, which we've lost, unfortunately, today. Imagine how fresh and nutrient-dense that protein would be. Of course, the outside would be charred and denatured for sure. But the inside, although cooked, would essentially be moist, easy to digest, and relatively acceptable from a biochemical point of view. Perhaps the reason we made it this far is because of cooking. We are, in fact, the only creature on the planet that cooks its food, and we do have the most neurons, and maybe the quantity of neurons we have in our brains is relative specifically not just to cooking, but to eating cooked meat. But I, for one, will never ignore the significance of fresh fruit off the tree, organic greens from the garden, and berries from the bush. I'm a naturalist, and that's okay. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from Isaac Asimov, professor of biochemistry and popular science fiction author. Proteins are immensely complicated groupings of amino acids arranged in intricate three-dimensional patterns that are as unstable as sunbeams on a cloudy day.